Sukkah Daf Lamed Aleph. Tanu Rabbanan, second line from the top. Sukkah Gizula V'Misachech B'Rishut HaRabim. Suppose somebody steals a sukkah. Now, how exactly does one go about stealing a sukkah? Well, we've already talked about the situation of karka, whether karka is nixilis or not. So let's take a look at some of the details about this as we go on. So somebody steals a sukkah, and we don't know, does that mean that he steals the place of the sukkah, that he walks off with the entire sukkah that wasn't connected to the ground? Does he steal the materials with which he built the sukkah? All of this we need to understand. So it says, in addition to stealing the sukkah, it gives us a case where somebody puts a sukkah in the middle of a Rishus HaRabim. Now, over there, it seems to be a problem of the place of the sukkah not being your own. So there must be a common denominator between these two, and the Gemara indeed is going to analyze the common denominator. In any event, in these cases, Rebbe Eliezer is posel, in both such cases, and the Chachamim are machshir. Omer of Nachman, let me explain what the case is. The case is where somebody takes a guy, throws him out of his sukkah. So machloket b'tokeif et chaviro v'otzi'o misukato. This guy built a sukkah, and now I'm going to go in there and use his sukkah, throwing him out. And this would be Rebbe Eliezer l'shitato, because Rebbe Eliezer holds, ein adam yotzei yedecho vato b'sukato shel chaviro. So remember, Rebbe Eliezer darshaned that ta'aseh lecha is the same as lakachat lachem. And that means that just like we say that the arba minim have to be yours, the sukkah has to be yours because it says lecha. Since Rebbe Eliezer holds that karka, the truth is it works out either way. Because Rebbe Eliezer holds that you need lachem, which means whether, now, we're only saying this to make things work out, because we know what Rebbe Eliezer holds. But Lamaisa, since it doesn't matter, the Gemara wants to speak out in the broadest sense what it would be that Rebbe Eliezer would be saying, because it really is not dependent on its being a inyan of karka nigzelet. Because Mamonav Shach, if you hold that karka is nigzelet, when we say that karka is nigzelet, it means so that in the same way that you take something that is a metaltalin, and you can be kene it by taking it away from the owner, you could take it away from the owner if it's karka too. But then it would be a sukkah whose karka was nigzelet. And even if you hold karka in a nigzelet, and that is not the issue, the issue is that you don't own it. So even if you'll say, I'm not sitting in a sukkah gezula, but you're certainly sitting in a sukkah that is borrowed, to say the least, right? I mean, one heck of a borrowing job, but lamaisa, I'm not sitting in my own sukkah, I'm sitting in someone else's sukkah. And even if the guy would have given me rishus to sit in his sukkah, it still would not be good, according to Rebbe Eliezer, because Rebbe Eliezer darshaned earlier that the sukkah has to literally belong to you. So therefore would be a sukkah she'ula. So no matter what, the bottom line is, according to Rebbe Eliezer, no matter what you hold, the sukkah would be pasul. Rabbanan, they go according to their own shita, because they never darshan the lecha. And therefore, according to them, adam yotzei chovato besukato shochaveiro. So even if you were sitting in a sukkah that is borrowed, then you would be yotzei. And since they hold that karka in an exilet, so then this boils down to a sukkah she'ula. If it's a sukkah she'ula, according to the Rabbanan, there's no problem, because a sukkah she'ula, you are going to be yotze with, because there's no lecha. So therefore, according to the Rabbanan, if you throw somebody out from a sukkah and you go into it yourself, they would hold that it's kosher. But let's talk about a case where you would steal the wood, or the schach, right? So you go to eight, the sichech b'hem. Over there, there's for sure no question. Why? Because definitely it's yours. It's mine. How did it become mine? I'll tell you why. Because since the halacha is that ein lo ela demei etzim, as we'll see in a moment, so the only way that the person can demand his money back that you stole is if he's able to get that etzim back. So then it would be stealing. But in this case, you either were meshana the shame, or you were Mishana the Maisa, or there's another issue, very important issue. And that is that because of what is known as takanat hashavim, that in order to make it easier for people to do teshuvah, so the Rabbanan were mitakein, that there is no need to give back something that you have built into a home for yourself. Because otherwise it would be very difficult. The guy says, look, you know, I made it that I walked away with your roofing. Oh, okay, so give it back. Well, if I give it back, I got to tear down my roof. So you stole it. Give it back. Never mind. I'm not doing teshuva. So that's called takanas hashavim, in which case the Rabbanan were misaken that you do not have to give it back. And if that's the case, then everybody is made it, that since it's now yours, it's completely and totally yours. So therefore, even if there wouldn't have been a shinui hashem, there wouldn't have been a shinui maisa, it definitely would be considered your own thing. So when we said before that a sukkah gezula is psula, that we had back on Chav Zayin, what was that talking about? So that could be talking about a case where, as we mentioned there, you have a sukkah on in your Winnebago and somebody drives away with your Winnebago. So over there, it becomes basically the equivalent of metaltelim. And over there, he didn't build it, so there's no takanas hashavim, you're clear to give it back. The case, obviously, that the Rishonim bring is the case where it was on a agala, it was on top of a svina. So over there, since you didn't do anything, there's no takanas hashavim. It's a typical gezeila. And over there, indeed, it would be puzzle. How do I know that this must be the case that we're saying over here, that's definitely a case where you stole a sukkah that was attached to the ground itself, and therefore the only question is whether there's a din of she'ula, because it's definitely not considered to be the case of a gezula. I know it from the fact that it says the case together with the other case, namely you went out and you built a sukkah in the middle of Rishus HaRabim. So what did I do in Rishus HaRabim? In Rishus HaRabim, I put a sukkah in an area that doesn't belong to me. That was the problem. So just like Rishus HaRabim, the issue is the karkas lavdi dei, stealing a private sukkah is referring to stealing a place where it's not your karkas. You threw the guy out, and now you're using his sukkah. That's precisely why we said that that would be the place where Reb Eliezer and the Chachamim actually disagrees. So there it's dependent on the question. A, is karkanik zelet? And B, is a sukkah she'ula considered to be a kosher sukkah or not? Now, what about the question of, is it considered to be a mitzvah boba avera? Basically, since you did not actually utilize the sukkah because of the avera, because the din of the sukkah, it isn't affected in any way by your using it. So the fact that you did an avera in throwing the guy out, since that doesn't change the place of the sukkah, the din of the sukkah, so then it's like you stole money and you have money in your rishus during sukkahs. No, so what? But that's not a pagam in the sukkah per se. So the fact that you did an Avera is not Nogea right now, the way in which you bring Yotze in the Sukkah. Now there was this old woman, Aisavta, Da'atayla Kami to Reb Nachman. She was a pretty smart woman, as we'll see. And she comes to Reb Nachman and she says, look, I just want you to know that the Reish Galusa and all of the big rabbis in this country that are sitting over there, the Reish Galusa, you should just know that none of them are being Yotze a sukkah. They're all sitting in a sukkah gezula because basically they stole all of the wood from me. And those were the avodim of the Reish Galusa.
Recording stopped.
Okay. They don't like my disk space. Thank God I have another recording anyway. So in any event, I would advise you to tell them they better return that to me and build themselves a kosher sukkah. Anyway, she was sitting there screaming in Reb Nachman's bezdin, and Reb Nachman paid absolutely no attention to her. Lo ashkach bar Reb Nachman. So she says to him, I can't believe that you would possibly be ignoring a woman of my incredible importance to the world. Do you realize that I had a father who was so rich, he had 318 different servants? She's referring, of course, to Avram Avinu, that those were the number of people that he took out which we say is really the gematria of Eliezer, right? But so that was the number of people that he took out to make sure that he was going to win that war and get back everything from Lot, including Lot from Sodom. So this is a woman whose father had that kayach, and you pay no attention to such a woman? Ah, chutzpah. So she figured this would finally, you know, impact Reb Nachman to have a little respect. Said Reb Nachman, you know, this woman loves babbling. She's a big fetcher. The most that she could have is not get back her wood. And therefore, it's irrelevant to the Reish Galusa and the people there. And she only is roy to get back the Dmei Eitzim. But the Dmei Eitzim has nothing. What? So you're telling me that they owe money? They owe money, and therefore they can't be yotz with the sukkah. This makes sense to you? What does one have to do with the other? So therefore, there's nothing really that I need in order to respond to. Now, there's a very interesting pshat, although it's a question whether it's really true. It's a very interesting pshat that Rav Nachman Bedavka ignored her. Because the question is, what would be the din after sukkahs, where it's no longer important that the guy would have to tear down the sukkah in order to give back the eitzim? So he wanted her to be able to recover her wood, which is what she wanted. So therefore, he ignored her, because like this, he figured, okay, she'll keep coming back. She'll come back to court after Sukkot. After Sukkot, I'll be able to get her what she wants. But if she forces me to make the psak now, I can only paskin that she's able to get to me eitzim. I can't get her back her eitzim. And that's what she's looking for, right? Okay, the question is whether that is true, because some of the shitas hold that if, in fact, the halacha would be that after the sukkah is over, that then you have a right to be toivea, the eitzim gufa. So then if that's the case, ultimately you do owe the eitzim. And if ultimately you owe the eitzim, then you weren't going to with your sukkah. So that's a question, whether the halacha changes afterwards, or now it's this gala that you weren't yotzi in the sukkah from before. It's an interesting discussion among the achrenim. Omer Avina, haikashura de metalalta de gezula. Suppose somebody has got this big sukkah, and he steals a roof beam. A kashura is a difficult piece of wood to get. It's a very long piece of wood, which in those days was very hard to find. And that's called a morish. So if you used this morish in your sukkah, now, halacha is that the same din of takonas morish, which is one of the dinim of the takona for teshuva, mipnei takonas hashavim. So Chazal made a takona that if you steal a morish and build a house utilizing somebody else's morish, you do not have to tear down your home in order to get the morish back. That's another function of takonas hashavim. So Ravina is saying this is true, even if it's just a sukkah. Mishum takanas morish, so that the din that I thought maybe would only be if it's going to be so difficult to have to tear down a real house and lose hundreds of thousands, that maybe they made a takana, but I mean in a sukkah, to tear down a sukkah, so go ahead and build another sukkah. I mean, what's the big deal? Kamash malam, that there's the same takana of takanas morish, sayasigamar, isn't it, pshita? And says the Gemara, I mean, didn't you just say a minute ago that the eitzim that were used for schadat the morish, the eitzim, didn't we say that the eitzim, there's a takanas hashavim? And we didn't say, well, I mean, what's the big deal? Tear down the sukkah. We didn't say that. So why should this be any different? What are you telling me the big chiddush about morish? Ah, because you see, Mao de Tema might have said, look, we've got basically a need to balance out the needs of the takanas hashavim with the needs of the person who suffered, he's the victim of this geneva. So the question is like this. I understand that when it comes to the eitzim, that over there you could say, what's so bad, he'll tear down his sukkah and he'll buy new schach. But on the other hand, it's also true, what's so bad if the guy doesn't get his wood back and he gets money back, he can also just buy new schach. So we have to go and tear down the guy's sukkah. But if it's a question of a morish over there, I might have thought that it outweighs the problem that the guy has who's going to have to tear down his sukkah is outweighed by the fact that the victim is going to have a difficult time finding an equivalent piece of wood to a morish as opposed to stam etzim for schach. So therefore, I might have said, okay, look, etzim are shchichim. I understand that when it comes to the etzim, so it's not a problem. Don't tear down the sukkah and let the victim buy the new schach. Masha Inkein, a morish is not that easy to find. So Abel Hailo Shchicha, maybe over there, the fact that it's a temporary binyan, the sukkah, should mean that the need of the victim outweighs the takonas hashavim in this case. Kamash Malan, that even in the case of a morish, he can return money instead of the actual morish. But Hani Mila Begoshiva, Avol Boser Shiva Hodor Beine. If it would be after Sukkot, so then it would have to be returned in its actual form. So if the guy goes and he sues during Sukkot, so then at that point he only has to pay. Masha Inkein, if he would wait till after Sukkot, so then he would get the actual morish that he stole. The question is whether if the guy didn't pay during Sukkot, we spoke about earlier, if the guy didn't pay during Sukkot, can you now sue to get the morish back? So this was the shaila that was involved in how to understand Reb Nachman's psak. But therefore, over here, Hani Mili Bego Shiva, this is true that it's Hodar Be'inei, but if he was Chibro Betina, if he made it a permanent connection, so he cemented it into place and so on, so then at that point it becomes similar to a house. Now the next case that we had was the case of a lulav that was yovesh. So we said lulav yovesh was possible. Rabbi Yehuda is machshir. So the question is, we had before, whether this din of hadar applies to a lulav or doesn't apply to a lulav. Says Rava, but this is only true about the lulav. Because the Rabbanan, they hold that the problem of a dry lulav is that it's not hadar. So what? What makes you think you need something that's muhudar? Because the Rabbanan savri makshinan lulav la'etrog. Just like the etrog is defined as hadar, af lulav by hadar. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda Savar, lo makshinan lulav la etrog. It's true, of course, etrog devrei kol hadar be'inan. However, says Rabbi Yehuda, where do you get the idea that you can be makish the lulav la etrog? Now there's tremendous machlokas over here in the Rishonim, the Rabbi Kivegor over here points out that there's no possibility that Rashi is right. There's so many things that point out the opposite. However, Rashi learns that the issue over here is not an issue of Sfara, but rather a question of whether you need to be Mekabel, a Hekesh, from your Rebbe, the same way that you need to be Mekabel, a Gzera Shava, which is a tremendous Chiddush, because Bepashtis, the Din, of you need to be Mekabel was said on a Gzera Shava and was not said on the all of the Dinim. And in fact, the Pashtas is that from all over, it seems clear that the only thing that you're not allowed to be Doresh Me'atzmecha is in fact the Gzera Shava. But the question of whether something is meant to apply as a hekesh would be something that you can derish yourself. And one of the rayas, interesting rayas, that the mafarshim bring is the din of smuchim. If we find so many machlokasin about whether we're derish smuchim and how it is to be derish the smuchim, so can you imagine that it would be a hekesh should be less than smuchim? Smuchim means where you have two psukim that are near each other. And a hekesh is where you have in the same pasuk, you have the two things. So how is it possible to say that when it comes to smuchim over there, we can have all of these arguments in terms of svara, whether we should darshan smuchim or what the smuchim is coming to tell me. But when it comes to a hekesh, there you don't have a right to be darish. Fascinating taina. Okay, but so in any event, the question over here would be, is the reason that Rav Yehuda is not makish, is that because he holds that we're not makshinan bichlal, and he didn't have that Kabbalah, or is it some other svara? People suggest the other svara. First of all, hadar Obviously, it's a definition of the pre. We're going to see what Rabbi Yehuda holds about that question in a moment. Furthermore, it may well be, some suggest, that even the idea of hadar is something that's applicable to peirot and not to the structure of the tree that holds the pre. Okay, there's other possibilities, but in any event, Rashi's approach here is bechlal, he wasn't makabel this hekesh. Says the Gemara, one second, you're telling me there's no din of hadar according to Rabbi Yehuda? Ubalulav lo boy Rabbi Yehuda hadar? Vatnan. Doesn't it say beferish in the Mishnah that we just had, Rabbi Yehuda omer yagdenu milamala? Remember, he says that if it starts spreading, the leaves of the lulav are spreading out, says Rabbi Yehuda, well, you have to bring them in so that they should be close to the shidra. So wrap them on top. Why would he say that? My timer, where would he get that from? Isn't it because that makes it more beautiful? In which case he holds that there is a chiyav of hadar in terms of a lulav? Says Gemar, no. Actually, it's a completely different reason, which the Brisa explains. Kidiktani taima. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Mishum Rabbi Tarfain, since it says in the Torah, kapot tmarim, the word kapot is understood as kafut, which means that it needs to be tied up, it needs to be close together. In which case, imaya parud, if the lulav started to spread and now the leaves are going away from the shidra, yichbetenu, so then you should tie it together, not because of hadar, because it's goof a part of the definition of what a lulav is meant to be. Okay, but look, how about this? Lulavoy, hadar, you're telling me he really doesn't learn that there's a chiyav of hadar? We're going to have the mission later on that says, eino gdimet halulav, ela bimino, that you cannot take the lulav and tie it together with the hadasim and the aravas unless you're using part of the actual tree of the tamarim. So that's what we do. You know, we make the kaishalach, we take a little piece of the lulav and we tie the lulav. Do we use a brand? We use a leaf of the lulav itself to be ma'age, the other meaning with it. So says Rabbi Yehuda. Now, where would he get that from? Why would he say something? Oh, boy. It's giving me trouble over here with memory even on this. I don't know what's going on. So why would he say something like this? La vishum de boi hodar? Is it not because he holds that you need to have hodar and that it's not nice if you start putting in other things? Now, Lamaisis Tosus points out, we could have pointed out over here that, I mean, so how do you explain the fact that if you use gold and you make a beautiful golden handle for the lulav, that that's considered what, not to be pretty? You think that that's the problem because the gold isn't pretty enough? I mean, obviously there's another issue. We could have said that. But the Gemara, in any event, is going to explain it otherwise. Okay, but this I'm really having trouble with this computer here. Shoot. Says the Gemara, that's not the reason. The reason that he says that you have to have it with the same min is clearly not because of beauty. Because Omar Rava, you can actually use sieve. Or the sieve is that sort of ropey stuff that grows around the bottom of a palm. You can use that. You can even use ikra de dikla. You could take the actual piece of wood, the bark around the edge of the tree. That's not very beautiful. So obviously his problem isn't beauty. So what then is the problem? My time in the review, awesome. So what then is the reason? The reason is that he holds that since you are mechuyev to make the different pieces of the lulav and the hadasim and the aravas, you have to tie them together. If you bring another material, so then the fact that you bind them all together makes that material part of the lulav, in which case you're now going to be showing that you've got five minim instead of four minim, because the very fact that this is bound together with the other stuff means that you're showing that it's part of the other stuff. So that's the reason, but we have no basis to say that Rabbi Yehuda holds that there is a din of hadar on a lulav. Okay, so let me ask you now the other point that you made. Rava said that Rav Yehuda definitely agrees that an esrog has to be hadar. Why does the esrog have to be hadar? Just trying to get rid of something else. Something's very wrong. V'atanya, arba'a minim shebelulav, kishem she'in pochatim mehem, ein mosifin aleihem. The same way you can't subtract a min, you can't add a min. So if lo matza etrog, if you can't find an esrog, so you'll say, okay, so you know what, let me bring some kind of other fruit. No. Lo yavi lo parish, v'lo rimon, v'lo davar acher. You can't bring like a quince or a pomegranate or something else instead. I mean, why would we have thought we should bring something instead of the esrog? That's weird. The Gemara will ask that in a minute. And if you have kimushin, then they're ksherin. If they're very withered, the parts of the lulav, that would be okay. But if they're totally dried out, it's not okay. And Rabbi Yehuda says, even if it's totally dried out. And Rabbi Yehuda said, I'll tell you, there was once a Maisa, people who lived in these large towns where they were far away from any access to lulavim. And it was like a big deal. It happened in Europe as well. Where are people going to get palm in Europe? They had lulavim, and they kept those lulavim for generations, and they would be morish their lulav to their grandchildren. And their grandchildren use these old lulavim. So you see that it can't possibly be that it's possible. Well, I can't figure out where that's coming from. But it can't possibly be that it's possible, right? It's a barnea. That's what it is, a barnea stirring everybody just to remind me to take a drink.
I'm in transit. The buttons are funny. I just did.
The buttons are funny. There's a lot of stuff that's funny. Anyway, so if Rabbi Yehuda is saying that you can use completely worn out things, so apparently he holds that there's no pagam in hadar. To which the Chachamim replied, that's a raya. You're bringing me a raya from somebody who doesn't have access to a lulav, that he should use something that was once a kosher lulav. Ein sha'at adchak raya. You cannot bring a raya from a case where you don't have anything like that. So this is a big machlokas, what that means. Does it mean that it's sort of a zikorein, right? So in other words, we want to take it so that people should not forget what a lulav is and that there is a chiyav in bringing a lulav. And therefore, you bring it, but you certainly should not say a bracha on it, right? Because, I mean, apparently you're just taking it for a memory. So this is the Raivachita. However, the Rosh says that that's not true. He is saying they actually took it, and I mean, otherwise it makes sense. Rabbi Yehuda is talking about a case where they wouldn't make a bracha on the lulav, so then he understood that the lulav wasn't kosher, and it was only being brought as a zecher. Therefore, it must be that they did make a bracha, and that Chachomim are saying, Einachinami, that if you don't have anything else, so then this is also good enough. In which case, says the Rosh, you see that hadar is not an absolute. Hadar is defined by availability. So if you have options to have a beautiful lulav, so bring a beautiful lulav. If your only option is a lulav is a lulav is a lulav, so then bring the old lulav. And that would be the lulav that you can make the bracha on. That's the point. So according to those shitas, you could actually make a bracha on it. This ends up, bizman hazeh, being a machlokas between the Svardim and the Ashkenazim, between the Mechaber and the Ramah. According to the Ramah, you can make a bracha on it. And that may have something to do with the fact that where the Ramah lived, there were no lulavim. And where the Mechaber lived, there were plenty of lulavim. But anyway, the point is that the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, you can use the dry lulav, but don't make a bracha on the dry lulav. The Ramas is going to make a bracha on a dry lulav. This now is nogea other cases where you have a bidyavad, and nonetheless, we allow you to make a bracha according to the Rama. Anyway, but getting back to our Gemara. So the Gemara is trying to prove that this is true about everything, and which would mean even about the Esrog, right? So when Katani Mia, since it says over here, Rav Yehuda Omer, Af Yeveshin Kisherim, isn't he referring to the Esrog? My lava Esrog. So apparently he holds that there is no din of needing Hadar on an Esrog. So the Gemara, no. He did not refer. He meant only the lulav, meaning the lulav with the hadasim and the aravas, where it doesn't say hadar. It only says hadar beferish on the actual esra. Okay, now you also just mentioned, and I'm curious what you meant. You said, kishem shein pochatimeyam, kachen mosifin aleyam. Well, obviously, I don't understand. Isn't there like an isra baltosif? I mean, why in the world would we think that you can add another one? Pshita. You can't add to a mitzvah. I mean, that's like saying, you know, maybe you can add another bayit to your tefillin and have another parsh in your tefillin. Of course you can't. It's an issur d'oraisa. Ah, but you see, ma'u detema hoyo v'yom rav yura lulav tzarech eged v'imayte mina achrina, if you bring something else, according to Rav Yehuda, and you don't put it together with the lulav. So then I would have thought that maybe according to Rav Yehuda, who holds that it's only the eged that defines the lulav, so then I would say, look, I mean, what's the big deal? You're holding your lulav and you're holding a plum. So what, you can't eat a plum at the same time that you're holding the lulav? There's nothing that's defining it as being part of this lulav, is it? So therefore, imayte mina achrina haylechu dekoy v'haylechu dekoy. Kamash malam that afal pikein, even though it's not tied, it's still considered to be a Baal Tosif, even Aliba de Rabbi Yehuda. Now, Tosis points out that this depends on how exactly you're carrying it. In other words, if you're carrying this new thing in the same way that you would carry the meaning Kiderach Delato, then it would be Osir. But if you use this other thing as a rope, let's say, so then it's not Kiderach Delato. So then, enochinami, it would only be aliba de Rabbi Yehuda problematic, because according to Rabbi Yehuda, the very fact that you need eged means that this is part of what it is that you're being ma'aged. And because of that, it would be like you're using another species. Masha inken, according to the Rabbanan, it wouldn't be a problem. So therefore, we have to really recognize where does it look like it's a chelek of the lulav, and where is the only reason that we have a problem with it, because of the fact that you hold lulav tzarech eged. Omar Mar, now I didn't say the other thing you said. You said, if you don't have an esrog, don't bring a watermelon. What kind of crazy thing is that? Well, obviously, pshita, well, what's the avamina to bring a watermelon if you can't find an esrog? Well, I'll tell you. Look, I mean, if you live in a place where you can't get hold of an esrog, you know, so what's going to happen after a couple of generations? People are going to think, you know, on Sukkot, all you have to do is have three minim, because we weren't able to get a srogan for so many years, it's just going to be forgotten. So at least this way, if you're carrying a watermelon, you know, so you tell the kids, look, this watermelon is a zecher for the esrog, but there needs to be something else. Gamash malan, therefore, it says, no, it's not kedai, because then people will believe that watermelons are the actual species you're supposed to be taking. You know, that's, in fact, some say that's the way that the Tema Niesra got started. It was once a watermelon. So because of that, we don't take other minim. Tashma. Okay, getting back to what Rava said. You said, according to Rav Yehuda, for sure the esrog has to be hadar, right? Is that true? Tashma. Etrog hayashan pasuv Rav Yehuda makshir. Over here it says that you've got an esrog that's been around for years. Apparently, it's already old, dried. As a matter of fact, there's a girsa that says esrog hayavesh, which means definitely not hadar. To Yufta, to Rava, to Yufta. Indeed, Rabbi Yehuda holds that the word hadar in the pasuk is not a definition of beauty. It means something else. Well, what do you mean? I mean, first of all, there's lots of things that Reb Yehuda apostles. I mean, you're telling me that an esrog that's not beautiful? But how do you explain the fact that the Mishnah later on says if you have an esrog that is green like a leek, Hayoro Kikarti, Reb Meir is Maksha, Reb Yehuda apostles. Why did Reb Yehuda apostle? What's wrong with a green esrog? Lav Mishum de Boyahada? Isn't it because that he wants it to be golden and rich and beautiful like an esrog is? No. So why? It's Mishum de Logomar Pira. Since it hasn't grown as a complete fruit yet, so because of that, it's not called the pre. It's no pre yet. It's a pre. And therefore, you're not Yotze. Barnea's not even able to respond. Look at that. So therefore, you're not Yotze in this case. Really? What about this then? Tashma, Shiur Etrog Katan. The smallest measurement of an esrog, according to Rabbi Meir, is an egos. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda says, no, what do you mean? You need a nice, big, really impressive esrog. It should be the size of a kibetza. Why is that? Isn't that Mishum Deboi Hadar? No, it's the same thing. A fully developed esrog is larger. So the problem over here is the same issue. It's not a fully developed fruit. Some make an afkamina. Some of the Achronim make an afkamina. It's not the same teretz. And that initially the yoreik was because it's not mature in terms of its taste. And over here, it's not mature in terms of its size. But in any event, the issue over here is that for something to be called a pre, it has to be a developed pre, a mature pre. That is Reb Yehuda's shita. And it's not because of Hadar, it's because of the definition of pre. Toshma, okay, what about that Mishnah that says, Ubegadol, Kedeshia Choshlaim Biyodo Achat, that the maximum size that is kosher for an etrog is that you should be able to hold two of them in one hand. So says Reb Yehuda. Reb Yossi says, no, even those temani etrogim are okay. Echad b'shtei yadav. Even if you need two hands to hold one etrog, it's also kosher. Now, what would be the reason Reb Yehuda says it has to be small? Isn't that because, I mean, a giant esrog doesn't have that same beauty of the perfection of the nice, small, perfectly formed esrog. Isn't that why? No, it's a logistical reason. Look, how many times has it happened to you that you have to switch the position of your hands so that you have the lulav in one hand and in the wrong hand, the esrog, and you have to switch your lulav and your esrog, or it's hashanas and you have to carry your sitter in one hand, you're going to have to carry the esrog and the lulav in the other hand. Happens all the time. Now imagine if you were carrying a watermelon-sized esrog. What are the chances your esrog is going to survive the switch? Splat! That's the problem. So if the esrog falls, you're going to end up with a posel esrog. Therefore, Tainus Reb Yehuda, look, be smart. Have an esrog that only fills up a half a hand so that when things are tough and you got to flip things around, your esrog doesn't fall. That's the only reason. It's Misham Kivan, the Amar Rabba. Lulav is supposed to be in your right hand and the esrog is in your left hand. Zimnin de mechal filevi ateluv chino. It can happen that you're carrying it in reverse and now you're going to have to flip. And then if it's too big, it's going to fall. And atiluv sule. So I don't understand. You're coming out. Actually telling me that even an esrog, according to Reb Yehuda, doesn't have to be hadar. I mean, the Torah did say it had to be hadar, doesn't it? So, el Reb Yehuda aktiv hadar. What does Reb Yehuda do with the fact that it says beferish in the pasuk that it's supposed to be hadar? How can he ignore that? Ah, says he, that doesn't mean beautiful. That is pre-eitz hadar, the fruit that lives. Yes, indeed. So back to Harry Potter. Most fruit don't make it to the next year, right? But this is the fruit that lives, meaning that even if the tree has brought forth new fruit, the old esrog is there from a year ago. There's another older esrog from 2 years ago, and it's still on the same tree. Now you show me another tree that does that kind of shtick. So that means this is a way of identifying the fruit that we call the esrog. So it's the pre-eitz hadar. It's the one that lives on from one year to the next year. And then we learned that if you have a lulav from an asherah, or you have a lulav from an ir hanidachat, that it's possible. Why exactly is it possible? V'shal asherah pasul? Didn't Rava say beferish that if you have a lulav that is used for avodah zarah, so you have a lulav where maybe one of the things you need to do for avodah zarah is throw lulavim at it for Palm Sunday or something, you know? I mean, so a lulav for Palm Sunday, would that be kosher for your sukkahs? Says Rava, you shouldn't be neitel such a lulav because it's mo'us. But im natal kasher, if you did, it would still be kosher. Why? Because even though it might be osur ba'ana, but since mitzvot lav lahenot nitnu, so the mitzvah is not considered to be an act of hana, and therefore it would be kosher. So why does it say over here you're not yotze at all? Is not an asherah just another word for avodah zarah? Ah, here we're talking about the asherah of Moshe. That means the asherah that was found in Eretz Yisrael when we invaded Eretz Yisrael. So as Moshe Rabbeinu said, that asherah tisrafun. You have to burn all of those asherahs. Bizmana said we find an asherah. So over there, you can simply make sure that the goy is mevatel the asherah. And once he's mevatel the asherah, no longer is a din of avodah zarah. But there where we had a mitzvah specifically that it needs to be burned, if it needs to be burned, ketute michta chiure, as we explained before, anything that has a shear, and the lulav has a shear, has to be four tvachim high. So anything that is a shear, if there's a chiyav of burning on it, then that shear loses its chashivas, that is, if it has collapsed below the size of the shear, as if it's been ground away into pieces. Daikanami, you can make this diak from the Mishnah because it compares it, asherah, to a lulav shel ir hanidachas. Why does it put the two together? Because both of them are chayev in sreifa. Normal asherah would not necessarily need to be sorov. Therefore, Shema Amina, then we're talking about asherah shel meisha. And that would explain why it bedavka brings the two together. I think it might be kedai for us to do the Miktam Rosh already. Once we get into the different sulam of Miktam, it might be kedai to wait until tomorrow to do that. And just to go over now these dinim of the psul of Yovesh, which we finally finished over here. So as we spoke about, am I back on? Yeah. So as we spoke about, according to Shmuel, we were talking about the Yom HaRishon, remember? And he said that the only issue over here that had fooled us into thinking it wasn't the Yom HaRishon was because of the fact that it included the Gazul instead of the Shaul. So he explained why that's true. So according to him, we were only talking about Yom Rishon, so we don't have any basis, according to Shmuel, to passel a lulav hayovesh in any other days. And in fact, it's mashma that way. It's mashma that way in a number of places. Mashma that way from Yerushalmi. Tosfos learns that that's true according to Rabbi Hanina, as we'll see. But remember, there was a completely different approach. The Ramban understood that we're talking over here only about the first day in the Beis HaMikdash, or the 7 days in the Beis HaMikdash. We were actually juxtaposing the din of Lachem, which is said only B'yom HaRishon, because it says Beferish B'yom HaRishon, to the other din. And therefore, there was no psul bichlal of Hadar, according to the Ramban, that was outside of the Beis HaMikdash at all, except for that first day. But the rest of the days, you could have a completely dried out lulav, that it's mashma, that the Rambam holds that, the Shulchan Aruch seems to hold that. Lamaisa, because there are those who are chelek, so the Ramah paskins that it's possible. But there's an awful lot of basis for not being too worried about a dry lulav. Then there's also the question, what is a dry lulav? When you're talking about lulav ayovesh, I mean, whoa, what is dry? And I'm sure that you've all had these things happen in which you have dry tips of the leaves of the lulav. We're going to see whether just a dried tip is considered to be a lulav yovesh. But first of all, what is yovesh? So the din of yovesh, Tosfos suggests that we should learn it out from a bechor. And a yovesh of an ozen of a bechor is so dry that if you scratch it with your fingernail, you simply pulverize it and it just disappears. So that is extremely dry. Now, some of the other shitas, the Rosh's shita, is that it simply has no more coloration at all. It's turned white, and it looks like it's completely without any kind of life in it. So many learn like that. Lamaisa, the Ramah, again, remember the Ramah searches for kulas in the inyana of the lulav. It was very difficult to have a kosher lulav. So he brings the Tosfos Shita that he says, Noegin b'medina is elu, around here where it's so hard, she'ein lulavim mitsuyim, we don't find any lulavim around here, is not to consider it to be yovesh until it's actually nifrach b'tziporin. But the question is, how much of the lulav has to be dry to be considered to be yovesh? So that is big machlokas rishonim. The Ravid learns that it's not enough to say the leaves are dry. That will not pass a lulav. It's only where the dryness has already affected the actual shidra of the lulav, which is the central spine from which the leaves come out. But, halacha lemaisa, there are many, many chumras. First of all, the middle leaf that we call the tiomet nowadays. So the question over there is that leaf alone. Some of that leaf alone, would that be possible or not? So, I mean, the Brisker are very makbet on this because of the Gra, they're medayik from the Gra, and from the Ritva, that even a little bit of Yeveshut on the Tiyomet is considered to possel the Lulav. Now, the Chazon Ish speaks out that you should not confuse the leaves that he calls Nisrafu Yidei HaShemesh. They were burned by the sun. So they've turned into a deep brownish red color. Don't confuse that with the dry, which is lavan. That's not considered to be dry, he suggests. You shouldn't be makbid on that. And again, the question is, even if it is dry, if it's difficult to get a lulav and you don't have any other option, then we get to the machlokas that we had. Should you be notulit in terms of a zecher bi'alma? And if it's a zecher bi'alma, like the Ravid says, so then of course you wouldn't make a bracha on it. Or would you be mevarech on it, like the Rosh says? And the concept of hadar in terms of yeveshut is a relative concept based on what is available and what do you have that is less than that. But it's not an absolute concept to passel it if there's nothing else that's there. Amazingly different approach. Okay, Lemaisa Mefarshim, bring that afilu l'Rabbi Yehuda, who is not so makbid over here on Yavesh. Certainly he's made it that there is a din of mitzvah min amufcher. And remember, that was Rashi in the Mishnah up front, that there's always a mitzvah of zekeli v'anveyu. That's not what we're talking about over here. Of course, you should always be nizhar that the minim that you have are as beautiful as possible. But that din is a lechatchila, and it's not ma'akev the way that hadar is. So that's basically a summary of the yeveshus on the lulav. It's very, very difficult to find a lulav that does not have the problem that is traced to the Gra, the Ritva, of the tiyomet being dry on top. Very, very difficult. Some years, nearly impossible. I have literally spent days looking for a lulav in order to be yotzei that shita. So, you know, there's plenty of shitas, obviously, to rely on that you don't have to be back, but on just that small amount of yeveshut. But in any event, there are some years where you can actually have mazel and get it. But certainly the nisrafua yidei HaShemesh is the standard problem with lulavim almost all the time. Anyway, I wish you all a very wonderful Rosh Chodesh, a very wonderful Shavua Tov, and hopefully to be zeicher to the Tefillah of Moshe Rabbeinu in the beginning of these 40 days that culminate in Yom HaKippurim. May it be a good journey, a happy journey, And when that leads us to Gula Shleima, Amen. Yinael Yeshua, see if Tachfah, Shavua Tov, Chodesh Tov, everyone.